Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to Panel to Screen. I'm Bo.
And I'm Bell.
Bell, man, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm just super tired.
Yeah, it'll do it. It'll do it, man. I'm tired as well. But you know what? We are, I'm also enthused and energized because we have finally arrived at the rose-colored retrospective that everyone's been waiting for. As fans and fanatics and stans have been cheering forth, looking forward to the forthcoming Snyder Cut that will eventually come on HBO Max. We still have this film to deal with. That's right, the original theatrical release of Justice League. Now, this is a rose-colored retrospective. And if you're not familiar with a rose-colored retrospective, it is where Bell and I take a look at a film that may or may not have been universally beloved or universally hated, and we just talk about what we love about it. There's no really, you know, hard critique that talks about what we don't like or, you know, this, that, or the other. We just really go in full positive all the time, or at least that's what we strive to do as part of the Rose Colored Retrospectives. Throughout this series of the release of the Rose Colored Cut, we've been going through various Snyder films or films that have existed in the DCEU that are not just Zack Snyder's films. We've done some others as well. And we have had some success finding completely new things to love about these movies and some less than success trying to rush through it so that we could get to the end. I'm stoked for this one though, Bell, because I think this is definitely one of the ones that I found myself falling in love with this film in a way I'd never had before, and so that's for me when the rose-colored retrospectives become the most fun. That's just me. I mean, not to tip the bean can, but going into this, man, I mean, like, how are you feeling? Are you, is this easy or is this Ang Lee Hulk? What are we looking at here?
Hey, I liked Ang Lee's Hulk, kind of, sort of. Maybe it was interesting going in into the theaters. I had certain expectations. I had zero expectations going into the rewatch, and I think that helped frame everything for me. And yeah, like, you know, there are a lot of things that I found enjoyable that I kind of, you know, that I liked about the film. And I was, it was much easier to sort of like glaze over the things that initially in our original, you know, review of it, I could just, you know, glance over those and just focus on the positive stuff. So yeah, rewatching definitely allows you to sort of, you know, set your expectations before going into it. And overall, I feel like it helped me enjoy the movie more.
You know, expectations is really key, I think, for this franchise as a whole, right? Like, I feel like there was almost like these two warring factions in the timeline or in the time frame that these movies came out. And that is fan expectations versus Snyder's vision. And the reality is that, like, they kind of came to a head in this movie when it was first released. But I got to tell you, even with all of that, and even as I think probably once we get done and we kind of get to the last, last film, I think we can even do maybe a retrospective on the franchise as a whole. But you know, there is something to be said for, you know, looking at a movie for what it was, for what we got. And yeah, this one, man. First of all, I just want to say it right here and now, okay? We're not going to talk about the mustache. This is a rose color retrospective. All right. So like at the time you may have gotten distracted by the lips, right? The CGI lips, but here's the thing.
I mean, it's really hard to unsee, but we're not going to talk about it.
No, we're not going to talk about it. Because the thing is, when you're not focused on that, you know what you do? You pay attention to what's going on in Superman having a tender moment with kids. And that's actually a really, really, like, great moment. That's a great Superman moment. This movie wrestles with these dual identities of being kind of trying to create these fan moments or kind of essentially not even fan moments, but these moments that are true to who we know the characters to be in the comics, while also wrestling with the Elseworlds interpretation of who these characters have been in universe. That is the challenge of this movie. And I think that for the components that it's made of, there are great moments that speak to either one of those realities. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. It's basically you have, you know, Snyder's vision and Joss Whedon's vision. Joss Whedon is more, I feel like his allegiance is more to the comic book interpretation.
Yes, he wanted to get us back on brand, so to speak. He was trying to get these characters to be more familiar to who they were in the comics. So like moments like that of Superman, like taking a breath when asked a question, like an honest question from a kid about, you know, what his favorite thing about Earth is. And, you know, Superman could have just like said, you know, anything and then just flew off. But he actually took a moment to think about it and realized, man, that's a tough question. There's so much to love about Earth. And that's not a moment, I think, from, you know, I'd be surprised. I love that moment because it's true to who the characters in the comics. I would be surprised if we end up seeing that in the Snyder Cut, because I don't know that that's true of who the character has been in this universe. Thus, the uniqueness of this movie.
Yeah, and that's what's really interesting about it, too, right? Is, you know, obviously Snyder's vision and where he was going with the franchise is completely different than what a lot of comic book fans were expecting. And seeing, like, it's blatantly obvious in Justice League with just, you know, you have the two different directors coming in and like, you know, scenes are the tonality of them changes between different scenes and things like that. And you can really tell that the differences there and how Snyder wanted to go and how Whedon wanted to go. And it kind of makes me sort of excited to see where Justice League or the Snyder Cut's going to go. Because, you know, rewatching all this stuff that we've done, it's really put everything in a different lens. And it's kind of like, you know, reinforced that idea that this is an Elseworlds tale. And my preconceived notions of who Superman was and who Superman is from the comics don't necessarily apply in Snyder's universe. And so with that frame of mind, it's going to be a lot easier for me personally to jump into the Snyderverse and just see where Zach wanted to take it. I think that's a really neat opportunity for fans, is to kind of, you know, keep that in mind before watching these films over, you know, and seeing that this is a different Elseworlds style tale that Zach was trying to tell. And with Justice League, it's kind of interesting because, you know, you have Whedon in there doing the exact opposite of that. And so, yeah, it pulls and tugs in different directions, but you know, overall, the rewatch was entertaining, you know?
See, this is the thing though. The rewatch allowed me to really focus in on the moments, on the components, because you're right, there's components of different visions for what this movie should be. But if you actually just pause and take them for what they are, they're really, really great. And it's not, I would even argue in the movie, at least, you know, from a rose-colored retrospective standpoint, it's not even like, oh, I like, you know, Whedon's insert versus Snyder's insert. You know, example, moments that like the Superman being asked what he loves about Earth. That's that. What I loved about that is that's true to who the spirit and character of Superman that I know broadly would be. Another aspect, though, that's more of, you know, you could kind of see as more of a Snyder type of influence is the fact that Batman didn't really seem to care about protecting his secret identity. Everybody's calling him Bruce Wayne all over the place. That was something that people threw criticism at the time, because that doesn't seem like something that Batman would do. But you have to remember, in Snyder's universe, like, this is a Batman, for one thing, that's very different from the comic books, that's, you know, marking people for assassination, essentially, and it seems totally comfortable with that. This is a much darker take on the character. And beyond that, he's also dealing with, you know, in the face of apocalypse, who cares about secret identities? He is very much going into this with the mindset that he's about to die. So I actually, you know, whereas that kind of bothered me the first time around, I actually appreciated it a lot more this second time around.
Yeah, it sort of ups the stakes, right? Like, if Batman's willing to just go around, you know, telling everybody his secret identity, then clearly something is up, and it's less important to him to keep that hidden than it is just to be like, I need to convince you to help me to stop the world from going away, because that's, those are the stakes, right? It's the end of the world. And so who cares if, you know, some small fishing town in Iceland or wherever knows that you're Batman.
Right, exactly. And I mean, like, and you know, so that's great. And I got to tell you, the Iceland sequence, or when he's meets Aquaman, every single time I see that scene, man, like the first time I saw it during the rewatch, it always reminds me of Thor's introduction from Ultimates. Do you remember that? I know that's kind of a long time ago since you probably read that graphic novel.
I don't think so.
So it's kind of like a rock and roll take on Thor, as opposed to being the "Verily I fly thee from the Rainbow Bridge." It was much more of like a, you know, hard drinking, chilling out. You know, he had kind of a cult that followed him around, kind of like a hippie, but more like a, you know, again, like a hardcore, you know, picking up the keg and drinking, straight from it type. And I think he was actually on a barge when he's being recruited by, I wanted to say Iron Man, but I can't quite remember. It has been a minute. But no, there's just something about Momoa's take that just, it's got a very Thor, or at least an Ultimates version of Thor feel to it.
Interesting.
They were going for like a pro wrestler type of, a mixture of a pro wrestler, a hippie, and like a rock star. So, also, you know, I mentioned this on Twitter, man, but one of my favorite things that this franchise has given us, I still think that Wonder Woman's theme is probably one of the most iconic things. Like when the franchise is rebooted and we have completely new actors portraying different characters, I see Wonder Woman's, you know, like that's going to come back. I think that's going to be something that, much like other music we heard in this movie, will you know, be reoccurring down the line.
It is certainly the most iconic of the themes of this universe.
Yeah, and you made mention of some of the theme music you noticed this time around too.
Yeah, so I don't know what it was about the first time I watched it where I never noticed it, but there are tons of little interludes in the score of Danny Elfman's original Batman 89 theme and John Williams's Superman the Movie theme, which I thought was pretty cool. Like, you know, in kind of like iconic character moments or whatever of Batman and Superman, they would interject those little riffs, as it were, of the original themes that John Williams and Danny Elfman did for Superman and Batman. And I thought that was really cool. I had never noticed that before until I watched it now.
Yeah. I can't remember. I guess it was the Superman theme was the first one that kind of caught my ear. And I was like, huh. How did I not catch that? Like, it's so iconic. But I think they use it in such a, they're able to make these iconic, they're utilize these iconic themes in such a subtle way that it does kind of flow and pays a nice homage in the midst of the chaos. And I use chaos in a loving term, in a loving capacity here. You know, something else I noticed this time around, Wonder Woman versus Roose Bolton.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to do the math in my head. I guess that actor had yet to portray Roose Bolton at that time, huh?
I think so. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I'm not 100% on that. But good little phase of his career.
Yeah. Getting his butt kicked by Wonder Woman.
Well, yeah, and then going off to, you know, I guess be beheaded by his son or stabbed in the back.
Yeah, but not before killing a pregnant lady and all of her family.
Oh, the Boltons, man.
Boltons. Yeah.
Sorry, spoilers for Game of Thrones. But yeah, so that was kind of fun. Let's see what else, man. Batfleck continues to be the most iconic Batman, or at least not iconic, but most comic accurate Batman of all time.
Yeah, like I always dig like all the costumes that Batman puts on in this movie. I love. I love like his just stances that he takes, and like, you know, using the grapple gun and everything, and just the way he moves feels very comic booky. I mean, it almost makes it look as if he has superpowers when he really doesn't. And, you know, I always appreciated that about the Batfleck, is that that's, you know, it's just a really, really great representation of like the comic on screen.
It's a fantastic casting, man. Like, you know, Ben Affleck, I mean, obviously he's got a ton of love and appreciation for the character. As you mentioned, like the crouches and everything just feels, you know, at one point he's like literally in the Dark Knight Rises, like crouch, and just embodying these panels. And that is something that obviously is a very Snyder thing, right? We even commented during the Batman v Superman Rose Kelly retrospective. It's almost like watching the most expensive motion comic of all time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this kind of continues on that. I'm not all the way through, but definitely at times.
Yeah. And it's really cool. It's really interesting though, to see like Snyder's interpretation of Batman is just so different from the comic, but like they nail the, like physical kind of aspects of that, like how he crouches, how he moves, all those kinds of things. But like the other more, I guess, I don't know, like esoteric things about his character, like he doesn't kill and things like that. Like all of those things are different, but like everything that's sort of like physicality wise and things like that, movement wise, that make Batman Batman are still in there, which I think is kind of cool.
I want to talk about Cyborg here for a minute because this is a compliment. This isn't meant to be a criticism. It's certainly not a criticism of this movie. I think if anything, it's a credit to this movie. I feel like this movie did a really good job of picking up where a Cyborg movie we never got left off. Does that make sense? Like there's,
yeah.
Like I feel as though we're supposed to have seen a Cyborg movie before this. And, you know, granted we got that, you know, 2 seconds in Batman v Superman, which I guess is the Cyborg movie. But like, you know, you almost kind of feel like this, his origin story, which, you know, granted, again, we got that 2 seconds in Batman v Superman, but like his origin story film would fit very nicely as a setup to this movie. You know, I kind of hope that if they ever go back and make the Cyborg movie, because at one point they were going to, I don't know if they still are, but at one point they were going to, my hope is that rather than kind of pick up where Justice League left off, is they actually go back and give us kind of a precursor. Because as we have seen, like with Wonder Woman, for example, like doing pre-movies or movie setups actually enhance some of these other movies. And I feel like that would be the case here.
Yeah, it totally enhances the watch through. And that, like the Cyborg movie would be a great place to introduce the concept of mother boxes and like where they come from and like all those different things that they, you know, that they had to kind of like squeeze into this film because they didn't really have an opportunity in the previous films to really go into it. And so, yeah, like that would be a great jumping off point for a lot of that. And, you know, especially since Cyborg is kind of like so attached to the mother box, you know, it helped create him and whatnot. So that'd be a great place to kind of explain that. And then like on a rewatch, you know, you watch Batman v Superman and then you watch Cyborg and then you watch Justice League and everything would flow so much better. Just like how we watched Wonder Woman first and it sort of just set everything up and it really made the watch through. I appreciated the watch through a lot more watching Wonder Woman first.
Oh, 100%. Like it really did enhance like the Batman v Superman watching. Or not just like her interaction in it, but certainly her interaction in it, having had that perspective on the universe and her backstory kind of pre-established. And, you know, even like this, you know, they, you know, reference, for example, Steve Trevor is, you know, Batman kind of throws Steve's name at her and also asks the question of, you know, hey, you know, Superman was a symbol of hope. Why aren't you? You are a superhero. You can do all of these fantastic things and you're just chilling out in a museum. And, you know, the fact that Steve is dead in this movie, and the fact that she isn't yet a symbol of hope, despite what we've seen in both of those two, to both of those two points in the 84 film, makes me think that that movie, that Wonder Woman 84, is going to answer that question, right? Like we are going to see perhaps what it was that maybe either took her off the stage, maybe even erased her from the memory of the public. You know, we've seen Steve Trevor kicking around, but have we? I don't know. You know, like spoilers, but clearly he's dead by the time of Justice League.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to end on a dark note, and that would be, again, something really cool if we ever do like another rewatch of the DCEU to watch Wonder Woman 84 before some of these other films, and like then that scene is going to have a lot more context, and it's going to hit a lot harder, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I really think that, you know, again, like if we were to have a Cyborg film down the line, I would hope that it would actually be set before this movie so that we can get the origin story that I feel like would work really well with the movie. Now, I love Cyborg in this movie. I love that they kind of almost combined him with Blue Beetle, the second Blue Beetle specifically, with kind of the suit he can't control. And it's kind of constantly fighting against him. And, you know, at one point he's kind of evolving. He's like techno evolving as the movie goes forward.
Yeah. Now, do you think that was an intentional thing to sort of like roll in aspects of Blue Beetle just to I guess give a more interesting sort of story to Cyborg, since we didn't have anything in the beginning?
I mean, maybe. It's possible. The concept of kind of the alien, like a pseudo alien Iron Man-esque suit that's kind of taking control, that the user has to fight against, seems to be a concept that DC likes to play around with. So possibly, I don't think we're getting a Blue Beetle film anytime soon. So why not test out some of those concepts here? But I thought it worked, and it made him a very interesting character. Because when you think about it, Cyborg is, you know, obviously he can be a brawler in a fight, but he's also a blaster. He's got the ability to, you know, produce range attacks. He can hack into most systems, which, you know, perhaps when Cyborg was first showcased, probably was not nearly as, well, what am I trying to say? In the modern context, Cyborg is much more powerful than he would have been back when he was first, you know, initially introduced in the comics. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Just with the way that technology is kind of advanced, runs our world. And, you know, now like social engineers are our own mindset. So Cyborg, yeah, there's just a lot of potential with that character. So I do hope that we see more of him in the future. The Batman Wonder Woman dynamic, always great. You know, the security system, you know, spent a lot of money on it. Yeah. It looked expensive, you know, kind of thing.
And the whole Alfred sort of like quips about, you know, him wanting to date Diana. That's always kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, like, do you ship him?
I mean, I don't know. Like, that's the thing is, you know, with Zach's vision on this, like, I don't know if he would go more of a, you know, New 52 Superman, Diana ship. I mean, obviously there's Lois Lane there, but
I think Zack Snyder's going on a Zack Snyder. Yeah. Like there's no New 52 in this. Like Zack Snyder has like this vision. And, you know, honestly, we were not prepared back then for Zack Snyder's vision. We weren't, and
I don't know if that's necessarily his fault or the fault of the marketing and what audiences were kind of like, you know, given, I guess. I don't know. It feels like, you know, a lot of times we're expecting comic book movies and a lot of the Marvel films, they weren't necessarily 100% comic accurate, but they were definitely way more based with the comics than the Snyder films were, right? And so, like, I don't know if that's just a marketing failure where they should have been, you know, Dark Snyder, maybe even tag it like Elseworlds or something like that.
Well, but see, that's the thing. I mean, like, so if there's quote-unquote fault to blame, I think it's really Warner Brothers hiring Zack Snyder in the first place, not because Zack Snyder is bad at his job or anything like that, or not even because these movies are bad or his vision was bad. I think that he had a vision for a dark cosmic fantasy set in a DC universe. But that's not what audience wanted at the time. That's certainly not what the, you know, what the studio wanted at the time. So they kept him from being able to really tell the story he wanted to tell. And audiences kind of rejected it because we're like, no, we really want, you know, and part of it was just like, you know, Marvel was creating this moment where superheroes were kind of entering into the, you know, public consciousness, into the lexicon. And it's like, all right, you know, we got these epic Marvel movies. Let's get some epic DC movies. And DC was like, actually, we're going to do kind of art house and do this kind of crazy different direction because y'all loved 300. Let's get Zack Snyder on this. And, you know, like I said, I don't think we were prepared for his vision. And honestly, now we are. Like, we now live in a world where, like, the multiverse is a common under, like, the average Joe on the street is going to understand the concept of a multiverse. You know what I mean? Like audiences are different now. And Marvel kind of did that work. And now I think this really could have worked in, you know, especially a post-2020 world. I think a dark cosmic fantasy, people would be like, yeah, all right, let's go.
Yeah, I just kind of wish that they had leaned heavier into the like multiverse from the get-go. I think that would help a lot of people set their expectations properly on a lot of these films, realizing that there is a multiverse, that there is another version of Superman out there, and that this isn't necessarily him. So stop, you know, typing in all caps and internet comments about how you hate this interpretation of him, right? Like, I don't...
Yeah, appreciate it for what it is kind of the mantra of the rose-colored retrospective in general.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right, one of the things I absolutely loved about this, so, you know, and I put this on Twitter, that everyone else is playing patty cake with the parademons while Aquaman goes straight for the big bad midway through the first act. Like, I loved that, man. Like, parademons show up and everybody kind of like, oh, I'm going to fight a parademon here and there. Aquaman sees, you know, Horns McGee, and he grabs his fork and he's like, wah! And he just stabs him. He's like, grabs his helmet and everything. It's great. And I'm like, man, he's trying to have the big, like the boss fight now.
Yeah.
You hadn't even cleared the first level, dude. Like, I loved that, man. That was great.
Yeah. And I mentioned this when I was in the live tweet, but I really think those underwater scenes looked better than some of the underwater scenes in Aquaman.
Oh, well, look, I'm looking forward to going rewatching Aquaman, because I think, if I'm remembering correctly, I enjoyed that movie more than you did. But no, it's a different take, right? Like, Aquaman, what we'll eventually get in Aquaman is kind of more of a popcorn movie, whereas this one is still in kind of that dark gothic Atlantis, right? Like, the feel underwater is still very goth. We're not getting, you know, Mira's not wearing kind of the scuba looking suit. She's wearing like armor. Like, we're rocking in the Snyderverse here.
Yeah.
The waters are murky. I don't mean for this to be a criticism, but the whole, there's a fraction of a chance Batman thing is very reminiscent of what he said in Batman v Superman with, you know, oh, if there's even a fraction of a chance that he could destroy the world, we have to take that as an absolute certainty. It's like, oh, if there's even a fraction of a chance that he could come back to life, we have to take it. It's like, man, don't tell Batman that there's a fraction of a chance to do anything, because he'll do it. He'll do it right now.
Yeah. What's also funny is that, like, the argument that he uses to bring him back is the same argument that Boromir uses to try to use the One Ring against Sauron.
Right, yeah.
Because he's like,
we
have the weapon of the enemy. We should use it, you know, and they're like, yeah, and Gandalf's like, nah, it's not a good idea. But everybody else is like, yeah, let's do it.
Well, most everybody. I mean, Diana kind of points out like, hey, cool thing, you know, the whole bringing people back from the dead, kind of playing with godlike powers here as the only godlike individual in the room. Maybe let's not do that.
Yeah, and I really like the conversation that they had, because, and again, the and we did have Wonder Woman before Justice League?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And so we didn't need the context in this sense from a watch through like we did with some of the Batman v Superman stuff. But, you know, her talking about technology and how it can be used in harmful ways, like, really, you know, rings true what she saw during World War One and what we saw of her in Wonder Woman. And so I thought that was a really neat thing there to kind of, you know, show that these characters do learn things and they do grow. And yeah, I appreciated that little bit. I just didn't pick up on it the first time I watched. And rewatching everything now, it's kind of, you know, cemented that. And I like that little dialogue that she had there with Bruce.
So we got to talk about what is, I mean, without doubt, the greatest moment in this movie. I mean, like, I think it's safe to say, I mean, like, you know, I've already mentioned this movie is compiled. There are so many wonderful components, so many great moments. Aquaman's interaction with everybody, I think, is a highlight. But look, in the fight with Superman, everybody's trying to hold him down. Our boy, Barry Allen, goes straight for the throat and tries to choke. No, no, no. That. Our boy, Barry Allen. Sorry.
I should have known that.
Our boy, Barry Allen, running around him. Dude, I remember the moment that I switched to the side. I, like, stood up and cheered in the theater. And once again, I was, like, screaming at the house, man. Like, that is, for me, the best moment in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. I agree 100%. Like, absolutely one of my favorites. Just, you know, Flash is like, I got this. I'm going to run around. And then, like, you just see, you know, he's holding everybody back. And then he just glances over to the side and you're like, uh-oh, it's about to get real Flash does not know what he is doing.
That was great. That was just, again, those are the kind of moments that speak to a kind of a like truth within the comics, right? Like this idea for the first time that Flash is like coming into contact with somebody who can actually match him on speed. Kind of close.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
Yeah,
close enough. He could turn his head. That was pretty incredible. Flash, of course, you know, Ezra Miller's Barry Allen is a lot of fun. Like, you know, and we've talked about this before, and this is true of the universe as a whole. These are alternate interpretations of the characters that in some respects, in many respects, are nothing like their comic book counterparts because this is a completely different universe. And this is a very different Barry Allen. But it's a really fun Barry Allen. Ezra's take on the character is a lot of fun. Like, that is just an undeniable truth.
Yeah, and I have to wonder if having a fun Barry was originally part of Zach's plan. Because, like, you know, he has these dark and brooding interpretations of Batman and Superman. If he was like, let's throw Flash in there. Let's have him not be like he is in the comics. Let's have him be a little goofy and awkward to kind of lighten that up and, you know, maybe
kind of on the spectrum even.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, maybe even give him that sort of, I guess, bit of brightness that is lacking in a lot of these other characters.
Well, a little bit of there's a youth element because Cyborg and Barry or Victor and Barry are kind of the younger characters, but even Cyborg, I think because of the, like, everything that he's been through recently, like the trauma of having his body ripped apart and everything, like you don't really get a youthful sense of Cyborg, like you do in Barry. Barry has a very light, youthful energy about him. He's not even the Flash at this point. I like the costume. I don't care what anybody says. I like his costume. I think it's cool. But at this point, he's not even going by the Flash. That name doesn't even come up until he crosses paths with our Barry from the CW universe.
Yeah, which is...
Which, by the way, has been confirmed.
Yeah, yeah, and that's awesome. That's totally awesome. And you know, speaking of Flash and speed and stuff like that, that's one thing that I really do like that... the way they shoot speed in this movie by mixing like slow-mo shots and like high-speed shots really just gives the effect a lot of weight and a lot of like presence. And I really like how they do super speed in this movie. Like it's Wonder Woman in particular, Superman as well. And definitely the Flash. Like the Speed Force kind of, you know, has its own sort of like, you know, effects and stuff going on in the background, but like still the way he runs, I like the weird skiing kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of neat.
You know, that it's interesting because they're like, it's a, what do you think the inspiration for that run is?
Speed skating.
Is that it?
I mean, that's what it looks like to me. Speed skating.
Okay. Okay. Like, you know, what is it? Is it not distance runners, but like sprinters and like, folks that do the leaping thing. They run and then they leap over things.
Long jump.
Maybe. But like they run and no, it's not long jump because like there's little things you have to jump. And
oh, you're talking about hurdles.
Hurdles. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It kind of seemed a little bit like maybe like hurdle jumping. But now that you mentioned the skiing or the ice skating thing, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It just kind of looks like speed skating to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, you know, to some extent, maybe there's something to that, right? Like the Joker has his iconic laugh and the Flash needs an iconic run.
Yeah, for sure.
I can see it. So yes, you know, we do ultimately get the big clash at the end. I love that, you know, obviously Bruce spends the entire movie trying to get a team together and then they get to the big boss fight and he's like, all right, y'all go distract him. I'm going to go do a thing. Good luck.
Yeah, don't.
Which of course they call him out for, which is, you know, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I guess that's Bruce for you. I don't know.
I loved it, man. And I mean, like, you know, some of the criticism at the time was about how a lot of the narratives don't really flow very well. Going back and rewatching this movie, you actually do get some pretty good character arcs in here that maybe I just wasn't allowing myself to pick up on the first time. You know, like Bruce and Diana's whole kind of duo character arc of Batman, you know, can't just sacrifice himself, can't just like destroy himself for the sake of destroying himself. If he wants to, you know, if he wants there to be a team, he has to be part of the team. Diana, you know, has been in the shadows and she hasn't taken the lead. and she doesn't want to because that means sending people to their deaths. And so she gets to take the lead, and not only does she not send people to their deaths, her first job is to go and save somebody from killing himself. So there's great things good stuff. Well, good stuff.
Yeah, and another thing that I think just totally glossed over the first time I watched was the Batman Flash mentor mentee relationship there. Where,
oh yeah.
Yeah, like I have never done battle before line, you know, you know, stuff like that. And Batman's like, look, save one person, that's all you got to do, and then you'll know what to do. And like, I thought that was really cool. And you know, it feels kind of similar to the Tony Stark Peter Parker relationship in there. Yeah,
very much so.
It's not like the comics, sure, and I know a lot of, you know, Marvel fans were big detractors on that as well, but it works in that universe, and I think this Batman Flash relationship works in this universe, and I'm really excited to see more of it.
Yeah, we'll get a closing of it. It's based on, you know, from everything that we know, the Batfleck is coming back to kind of close the chapter on that, it'll be nice. It'll be a nice way to do it. Because you're right, they do, you almost get kind of an establishment of something there. You also get an establishment, speaking of relationship, you know, Batman doesn't not like Superman.
Yeah.
It was Batman v Superman before, but now it's kind of Batman plus Superman after this movie.
yeah. And this is another aspect right here that I'm really excited about the Snyder Cut for, because I want to see... It feels...
Oh, that had to be a Whedon.
I feel like the Snyder Cut is going to have a lot of fallout between those two, and that's going to be something that's fundamental to how it goes. And so that's something that I'm really excited about. But yeah, because, I mean, you know, a lot of people would complain and say that's really forced, and it came out, you know, and all these different criticisms of that. But I feel like that's because it wasn't supposed to be like that.
Right. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, even... in what we've seen thus far with the promo for the Snyder Cut, you know, in this movie, we end with the team all standing together. The sun is rising. The damage is becoming kind of this foresty, kind of crystalline, like, you know, Fantasia-esque something or another going on. And that's not right. We're not supposed to end in heaven. I think we're supposed to end in hell. Like, when this is all done... you know, in that establishing shot, they're kind of overlooking wreckage with the chopper or with the javelin coming to pick them up, right?
Yeah. That again feels like something that I feel like the endings of these, of the Snyder Cut and the Whedon Cut, are going to be vastly different.
Right. I mean, we just got all of our heroes together to fight off this, you know, Steppenwolf, who's the baddest of the bad that we've ever seen, took everything we got. And by the way, he's not even the real threat. The real threat is going to be, you know, potentially staring right at him. You know, that epic sequence in the past, I'm looking forward to maybe even an expansion of that to some extent in the Snyder Cut, because obviously that was a highlight of this movie, the Green Lantern ring flying off.
Yeah. You know, where was the lantern, you know, this fight?
Well, so here's the question here, right? Like, the promotional material at the time was about uniting the seven. And there, I mean, I guess Alfred was there. I mean, like, you know, maybe this is it. Maybe this is Alfred finally getting his props, right? Like,
I mean, maybe, nah, probably not.
Who was the seventh? That's the question, right? Who was the seventh?
Martian Manhunter, General.
It was Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, General Swan Lake.
You think so?
Maybe. I don't
know. I mean, I know that Snyder's all but confirmed that, but. Do you think that that was the original intent? I know that that will be in the Snyder Cut, that we are going to at least get a nod to the fact that he is the Martian Manhunter. But I'm wondering if, you know, because we saw the Green Lantern in the original kind of flashback sequence, was there supposed to be maybe Abin Sur like rolling in for the final fight here?
I mean, I feel like maybe. Like, what? I mean, what else could it be aside from, you know, Martian Manhunter? And certainly,
I mean, it could have been Martian Manhunter. I mean, like, I guess that's possible. It's definitely possible. Yeah, no, that'd be my guess. I feel like it's one of the two. But regardless, like, again, one of the greatest things about doing this rewatch is not only did I find a newfound appreciation for the movie that we got, it got me so hyped for what Snyder's take on it's going to be. And, you know, as many people have said, you know, the Snyder, you know, Snyder's recut isn't going to quote unquote fix the film. The Batman v Superman, we watched the director's cut and, you know, it did not quote unquote fix the film. Snyder has his flaws. That is true. But he also has a vision he really wasn't able to execute. And that's what we want. We want to, at this point, see what he was really going after. So now that he's got the budget, now that he's got the footage that he's got, the entire cast is willing to provide voice work to see this thing done right. There is a vocal group of fans who have been championing for the Snyder Cut to finally be released. We will get that in the future. And I'm looking forward to doing that, man. Not looking at it through the rose-colored lenses, because I'm never doing that again on something I've never seen before. But
yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, I really want to see where he was going with it. I'm making no guarantee. Like you said, with Batman v Superman, when I watched the extended edition, it didn't fix anything in my opinion, but this is not, you know, this is a rose colored retrospective. I am really excited. I want to see where he's going with it. I'm not one of those people who thinks it's going to be the greatest thing that's ever been made, the greatest superhero film that's, you know, ever been filmed and all that kind of stuff. But I am excited to see where his story ends up. And so I think, you know, yeah, definitely not going to do the rose colored approach on the first take. We're going to, you know, look at it critically like we normally do when movies come out. And but it's, I'm not apprehensive going into this like I have been some DC films in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. No, same thing, man. You know, and like I said, things are a little bit different in 2020.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and Snyder films feel right for 2020. So, yeah, bring it on. Bring on the Snyder Cut, man. I'm here for it. And this was a good one. Any other final thoughts about the Justice League?
It's funny, one musing I was thinking last night. I was, you know, going back thinking, you know, this second watch through has been enjoyable. I enjoyed this much more than I did when I watched it in theaters. And I was sitting there thinking, I wonder how much of that is Whedon stuff and how much of that is of other things that I enjoyed. How much of that was Snyder? And like, I was curious about that, because at least now I have the mindset in the headspace to go into when watching the Snyder Cut to like understand that this is an Elseworlds thing and all that kind of stuff, and just to experience what he's talking about. But like, there are things that I remember enjoying more this time around, and I was, and just in the back of my mind, I was like, was that Whedon or was that Snyder?
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. But I mean, like, to some extent, I didn't even, you know, the things I liked. And whether or not it was Snyder versus Whedon, you know, I get the sense that, for example, Aquaman had a lot of quips, but I kind of feel like they were Snyder quips. I don't think they were Whedon quips.
I think
some of it maybe.
I think all the Batman quips were Whedon Batman quips.
The Batman quips were likely Whedon quips. That's true. And I mean, like, a lot of the Flash stuff as well, to some extent. I mean, like, you know, I don't know. I'm curious, man. Bring it on. Bring on the Snyder Cut. Release it. I'm here for it now. I was not before, but I am now. Hey, we want to let people know too that if they have enjoyed this series, don't worry. We did get to the seminal. Is that the right word? The pivotal.
What are you talking about?
The thing. The crescendo. Climax.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're here at Justice League, but we're going throughout the entire universe. So even though we have arrived at Justice League, we are looking forward to also going through Aquaman and doing Shazam. Are those the only two remaining, or is there any others beyond that? Because I'm pretty sure that's it. I think we go Aquaman and then we go Shazam.
Yeah, Aquaman and Shazam. Kinda, yeah.
Yep, and that'll close it out. So it should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to do those. I mean, obviously those... Both those movies, I think, were a lot of fun. I actually enjoyed Aquaman a little bit more than Shazam. Belle actually enjoyed Shazam a little bit more than Aquaman. So it'll be a lot of fun. There'll be some good moments to pull out as we review those with our full-on rose-colored glasses. Also want to encourage you, if you're looking for something fun to do, if you're trying to spend a little bit extra time at home, trying to stay off the streets, stay off of, you know, going around to the store, what have you, trying to do the quarantine thing. We want to encourage you, come play with us. We're doing some Minecraft at the Flashcraft server. You can DM us on Twitter to learn more about how you can join us there. We've also got some videos that in the very near future will be a lot easier to find. But right now, if you go to flashtvtalk.com or tvtalk.fm. You can find the links to learn more about Flashcraft there, as well as the entire Rose Colored Retrospective series and more. If you want to support the show, please do head over to patreon.com/tvtalk, where you can learn more there. You can do things like join our Discord for some great discussion. We also have ways to keep up with us throughout the week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at TheRealBoYork, and Bella's at RingThatBell. I spell my name B-E-A-U. He spells his name B-E-A-L-L. We spell it that way because that's the way our parents spelled it. That's how that works. That's going to do it for us for this week. But for me, for Belle, for Belle's mom.
Hi, Mom.
Go have a Justice League-y day. Snyder-tastic day. Go have a Snyder-tastic day.